Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Frances Nesbitt and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey. We're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to send us any questions or comments that you might have. Any questions from the garden now that the weather has finally picked up, send them in. You can get in touch with the show by text to 086 353 7782 or by phone on 776 2777 or email kitchengarden@ckc.ie. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, don't bother texting us as we won't get to see your message. But of course, you can still email us at any stage during the week. Now, today on the show, we'll be talking to Kilkenny's Podge Mead of Bula Bus fame about street food. Later, we'll be talking to Mark Diacono, a gardener, cook and author from Otter Farm in the UK, about some of the more unusual fruit and veg that he grows on his farm. There. Mags, how are you? How was your week?
Good. I love the sunshine, so I can't complain.
No, it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's makes everything a little bit easier. Even weeding buttercups and things are nicer in the sunshine.
Oh, God, plenty of buttercups around now.
Yes, I think I actually have all varieties in my veg patch, but I'm getting there with them.
It's a plant or a flower that I often see on those posters on social media, you know, plant flowers for bees and plant for the pollinators. And the buttercup is often included, and it's poisonous to the bees. It's poisonous to everything. I think we've mentioned that on the show before.
We have, yeah.
Very unusual kind of for a plant to escape without some kind of predator. But
And it's a pretty little flower, you know, in its place. But yeah,
it's useless not, to man and beast.
Well, it's okay when it's dried, so it's okay in hay.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's not great. I don't like it. But anyway,
Invasive, nasty little thing as well.
Yeah, it is, and horrible long root system that kind of looks a little bit like strawberries, and it grows, it can't get any physically closer to the strawberry root than it does, but there it goes, so it's hard enough to get it out. But anyway, I'm tackling them at home at the moment. I did the dawn chorus actually in Jenkinstown Wood last Sunday morning.
Oh, lovely.
So yeah, it was an early rise. About 25 people I think gathered at about 4:30, and it was dark and it was very cold, like there was a bit of frost that night, so it was quite a cold morning to be doing it. And heard lots of birds, but not as many as they had expected, actually. So maybe a tiny bit disappointing. There was blackbirds and different thrushes, but the tit family obviously found it too cold and there wasn't really much from them. And a lot of the migratory birds were very quiet as well. So we were kind of nearly finished by the time the sun was starting to rise. I drove home and it looked really nice, actually, because the sun was rising at that stage and there was kind of a nice mist over the river valley and that, so it did look quite spectacular. But it was a nice thing to do. There's still a few on, actually, and the guy who led the walk last week is leading another one in the castle park. I think it's next weekend, and there's one in Durrow as well. So there's quite nice, some nice natural history walks on at the moment. The bluebells, though, were spectacular in Jenkinstown. There's just bluebells everywhere. But at dawn, they're not as blue as they might be for the rest of the day, because when the sun comes up and there's nice bright, they kind of open up a little bit more. But there were just millions of them, absolutely gazillions of them. So it is quite spectacular.
It's
worth going to see during the day, actually, I think.
I did notice during the week that the palette has changed, apart from the buttercups. Most of the dandelions and the lesser celandines and so on, those yellow flowers of early spring are fading now, and more of the blues and lilacs are coming out. So the palette is changing of the wildflowers. And I found, I must have come across a dozen different varieties of flower just on a walk across the lawn earlier in the week.
Really, yeah, there's really great lovely variety. There's a lot of vetches and that out too. I was in the Castle Park actually on Wednesday evening with my smallest boy waiting for another boy, and there's an awful lot of lords and ladies and enchanter's nightshade, actually, which is a nice flower. And some of it was maybe a foot high. It's got a tiny little white flower and little clusters at the top and a big broad leaf. And then some of it was huge, like 2 or 3 feet high, but there's loads of that. You can't miss it. It's all along the paths in there. So, yeah.
Lords and ladies are an odd-looking flower, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
A very prehistoric look about them.
Yeah.
And they're most interesting, actually. There's a bulbous bit just below the open petal of the main flower, and if you slice that bulbous part, you actually see into the female and male parts of the flower. Really interesting anatomy, yeah. Like when you see into it.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
And the berries, of course, look great then when they develop later
they
in
do.
The year.
They're very poisonous.
Completely poisonous. The plant is completely poisonous, yeah, of no use to us.
No.
My favourite at the moment, my nicest find, I think, was the early purple orchid, which I found just under the trees out at Croan.
Oh, right. Really, we were talking about that last week, too. Yeah,
really gorgeous. Yeah. Really, really lovely flower. And then, of course, the Aquilegia has opened up the columbine.
Yes.
And I don't know whether it's that in particular, but there's an area that I planted up last year for the pollinators up in the walled garden, and it's just crawling or buzzing with hoverflies, absolutely buzzing with hoverflies, and a lot of them around the columbine. So I don't know whether that's a particular favourite of theirs or whether they were just gathering en masse, but it was hard to actually take a photograph of the flower without a fly coming and landing on it.
Oh, which, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
That is, and actually, I saw a lovely picture of like the dandelions. The flowers are really good for bees, obviously, but then when they go to seed, the goldcrests, goldfinches love the seed. So a lovely photo of goldfinches feeding on the dandelion seeds actually during the week.
Oh, well, there's plenty of them about.
There's loads of them, yeah. Yeah,
that's good. The dandelion season has really kind of peaked and gone.
It has.
There's golf ball size seed heads all over the place now.
And we were talking about the cow parsley last week, and now there we have it. It's white. It's the hedges are all white and stuff. I love that, actually. I love the look of nice country hedges with all the white along it. It looks really good.
It'll bulk up nicely now and they take on a whiter shade of white over the next couple of weeks. But food-wise, you've a bowl of strawberries.
I brought
in some
strawberries for you.
Good woman.
Yes.
They look nice.
All the way from Wexford.
Wexford strawberries.
Today's the first day actually I've seen the stalls at the side of the road selling strawberries. So that one that I bought was in Thomastown. So it always hurls summer, doesn't it? Well, there's lots of little things, but I think strawberries in particular. And I know we have them in the shops all year round, but they're nothing. The ones in the shops coming from America and stuff, I would never buy them. I just think, well, food miles and everything, it's wrong.
That just tastes of strawberry.
It tastes it properly, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah. They're really sweet, actually.
Really nice.
So I love strawberries. And actually have a few growing at home that you gave me years and years ago, but they're flowering now. I think they're actually the kind of the later variety in that.
El Santa.
They're not the early ones. Okay.
Nice big fruit on those. They're really, really nice.
They're only just starting to flower, so they'll take another while. Yeah. But they're probably the most popular fruit in Ireland, actually, soft fruit, grown generally in the southeast and eastern counties, as we all know and stuff. Very good for vitamin C, vitamin K, fibre, folic acid, manganese and potassium.
Oh.
So very good for you. So you can eat as many strawberries as you want. And they...
I do get full of them fairly quickly, though. Like, you know, a dozen of them, that'll do me, max. Like, I've had 2 or 3 out of your bowl here now, and I'm almost sous-vide. They're so sweet. It's so flavoured.
Yeah, yeah. But you can do different things with them.
Drink a glass of champagne at the same time.
Yeah.
That would help. Yeah. Did you bring in a bottle of champagne?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
In the ad break.
Under my... So what was I saying? Oh yeah, so they're low, but they're actually low in sugars. So they're a very healthy fruit, even though they taste quite sweet. So and obviously they've got no fat, so you can have as many as you want. There's lovely things to do with them, actually. I was at an event last weekend and we had shortbread biscuits with strawberries and cream. That's probably one of my favourite desserts of all time. Or meringues with strawberries and cream.
I like that.
Yeah, roulade.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also like have them breakfast with granola, with pancakes, with waffles, with your cereal, smoothies, or you can just eat them any way you want. Some people put balsamic vinegar on them. That's nice.
They're lovely, lovely fruit. They really are, and a real sign of summer. But of course the slugs love them too, so they do benefit from a bit of protection if you're able to lift them up off the soil at all, and preferably put them on a little straw around each of the plants. It helps the fruit develop more, because if the fruit lies against the ground, it doesn't develop that red colour, so the underneath will stay kind of green or even go a bit brown. Or if the slugs can get at them, they will
They will, yeah.
I think the secret to growing any soft fruit is grow as many as you possibly can, because the birds will get there before you do, and the slugs will take a few as well. So if you grow lots and lots of them, you're bound to get a harvest. But if you just have two or three plants in the garden, it'll break your heart, because you'll be watching a strawberry develop, and just as it gets red, something will take it from you.
Or you'll turn it over and...
Yeah, there'll be a slug sitting on the underneath. Yeah. Now, I have to admit that in the early part of the year, when my first strawberries come out, I don't care if a slug has had one side of it, I'll have the other. I'm not letting him get away with the whole thing. I do love the first fruit from the garden. And actually, I had a raspberry earlier in the week as well, and that's one of my favourite summer fruits.
Oh, but, raspberry already?
Well, it came from one of the fruit farms down in Wexford, so it's too early for mine. But... yeah, it was just really nice to be getting them again.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Summer's here or on its way or whatever.
Do you want a recipe for roulade?
Oh, yeah,
or
please.
Or leave time?
Yeah.
Well, 4 large egg whites. Make sure you just get the egg white, none of the yolk, very clean. 225 grams of caster sugar, and basically put that into your mixer and whisk it until you've got stiff peaks. Same as making meringues. And then you want to line a baking tray with parchment paper. Pour out your mixture and smooth it out to the edges as smooth as you can, so it's all flat, and into the oven at 150 for about 1 hour. And then when you take it out, really carefully turn it onto a clean baking sheet, just parchment paper, and pull off the other one. And then you want to roll it. So you're going to put your double cream, which is whipped, into the middle. And you can put strawberries in with it or whatever way you want to do it. I would generally put them in with it. And roll it really carefully, pulling the parchment paper along the way. Mm. And then you've got a nice roll, and put it onto a nice plate. And you can decorate it with a little bit of mint leaves. You can put some more strawberries on top, and some toasted almonds are quite nice too.
And slice it up then to serve.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah, it is nice.
Did you bring in one of those?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait for the outbreak. This is going to be great. That's really, really tasty sounding. We must.
But you're kind of getting tired of strawberries, though.
Yeah, well.
So I might just take it home.
Now, on Nature Notes this week, you wanted to talk about a personal favourite of mine, actually. The first one of these I ever saw was out at Crowan when I moved there about 15 years ago. And that's the little pygmy shrew.
The little pygmy shrew.
I love pygmy shrews.
You know what? I've never actually seen one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, come out and visit. And I'll show you one out there. Peggy, unfortunately, also loves pygmy shrews.
Yeah.
And Peggy can find a pygmy shrew at about 50 paces. And then she likes to play with them.
Oh.
And when a large dog plays with a tiny pygmy shrew...
Well, do you remember the weight of the gold crest last week?
6 grams.
Exactly the same as the pygmy shrew.
Really? Yeah. 6 grams.
Isn't that funny? Oh. Sorex minutus. So, and it's the only native shrew we have in Ireland. It's only here, they reckon, about a couple of thousand years. There's no fossils to back it up. Or there was the lack of fossils backs that up. So... it's about 5.7 centimetres long, which is quite small, isn't it?
Very small.
And the tail is quite a long part of that.
It looks like a small mouse, but with a more pointy face.
Yeah.
Conical
and it's got
face.
A paler underneath. But there is another species has arrived in the country, been introduced in the last couple of years and
that
stuff.
Came over in the hay during the last fodder crisis that we had in the really bad winter of 2010.
Oh,
it came from northern France.
The white-toothed shrew.
That's right.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of them came over in the bales. They were all hibernating in the bales, and suddenly they wake up in Ireland.
They go because they don't burrow. Mm. So they stay kind of on the ground in something. And it's about 3 times the size of our little pygmy shrew. I don't know that... I didn't read anything to say that it's affecting the population of our little shrew.
I was talking to Olivia Goodwillie about it a few years ago, and she was just afraid that it would kind of just push them out. So it would take over the same kind of habitats, and because they're a bit bigger, they'd be a bit bullier.
Possibly. But the last survey that was done of the pygmy shrew, they were found in every single sample that they did across the country, so they reckon they're widespread.
Brilliant.
But I don't know, the next time you see one in Peggy's mouth or something, have a look at its teeth. It's got a little red tip along the bottom of its teeth, which is iron deposits to make the teeth more resistant to wear.
Wow, I never noticed that. Wow, I must have a look.
Yeah, it's a little tricky to see now, but
Well, I rescue pygmy shrews from Peggy at least once a month.
Okay,
so,
we'll have a look at the teeth, we can back that up. They eat generally kind of insects, bugs, beetles, woodlouse, You'll find them in hedgerows, grassland, but they tend to like, you know, you won't find them in a mown lawn really, because they'd obviously be just open prey for all sorts of birds and that. But they need to consume, like, they're only 6 grams, but they need to consume more than their own weight every day. So they probably need to eat about 8 grams, which still isn't an awful lot. And if they have a couple of hours where they don't have food, they can kind of die of starvation very quickly because they're so small.
Wow.
So I'd say if Peggy is holding on to one for a long time, it's not going to last too long.
That is a fear. And particularly as well, then, like, the shock tends to get a small animal.
I'm sure,
like that, you know?
Yeah. And they have about 3 litters in a year.
Oh.
But 4 to 6 young in each.
They're a lovely, lovely little creature. And it's nice, kind of wild animal, you know, to see in your local environment. You know, I love to see them in the garden. Now, they're not slow and they don't pose for pictures, you know. They're really, really racy, and at a distance it's very hard to tell them from a small field mouse. But
I can't believe I've never seen one.
Yeah, well, I'll take a photograph and send it to you next time
much.
I rescue one. Actually, we better take an ad break actually, but we might have a little poem. We're going to be talking to Podge Mead shortly about street food, and then we're going to be talking to Mark Diacono a little later on about his garden. But I came across, I was reminded of a poem that Shane Massini wrote during the week called Digging, and it kind of seems appropriate to this time of the year. So we might have that in the lead up to the ads. We'll be back shortly.
Death of a Naturalist.
Well, I get
Digging. Between my finger and my thumb, the squat pen rests, snug as a gun. Under my window, a clean rasping sound when the spade sinks into gravelly ground. My father, digging. I look down till his straining rump among the flower beds bends low, comes up 20 years away, stooping in rhythm through potato drills where he was digging. The coarse boot nestled on the lug. The shaft against the inside knee was levered firmly. He rooted out tall tops, buried the bright edge deep to scatter new potatoes that we picked, loving their cool hardness in our hands. By God, the old man could handle a spade, just like his old man. My grandfather cut more turf in a day than any other man on Toner's Bog. Once I carried him milk in a bottle, corked sloppily with paper. He straightened up to drink it, then fell to right away, nicking and slicing neatly, heaving sods over his shoulder, going down and down for the good turf. Digging. The cold smell of potato mould, the squelch and slap of soggy peat, the curt cuts of an edge through living roots awaken in my head. But I've no spade to fellow men like them. Between my finger and my thumb, the squat pen rests. I'll dig with it.
You can email the show, kitchengarden@corkc.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey. And thank you to those who've sent us in texts. We're going to get to those in just a few minutes. We're here live today, Friday, from 4 to 5, and you can send in questions or comments by text to 086-353-7782, or you can give us a call on 776-2777. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday afternoon, remember, don't text us, as we won't get to see your message, but you can email us at any stage, kitchengarden@corkc.ie. Now, we're joined in studio by Podge Mead of Bula Bus fame on the parade in Kilkenny every Thursday at the stall there at the market. And I've just found out, Podge, that you're from Tipperary.
That's right, I am.
Mags, another Tipperary person here on Community Radio Tipperary. Mm-hmm. Or, sorry, Kilkenny.
There's so many good people.
All the good ones from Tipperary, I think that's it.
You've been here for a long time, though, Podge.
I have, yeah. I'm seem to be married into it, actually. I'm getting married next month, so the end of next
congratulations.
Month.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Marrying a Kilkenny woman, of course.
Good stuff. listeners would be delighted to hear it. You can stop typing out your angry text message now about more Tipperary people. So on the in the farmer's market on the parade every Thursday at the stall there, serving hot food. I love the stuff from yourselves.
Thank you.
Really, really nice. Those sweet potato fries are the only sweet potato fries I like, actually.
I don't know how you get them crispy, actually.
I think everyone's mistake is that everyone tries to make them in the oven, and you can't do that. Mm. They have to be fried twice. I have people coming back to me all the time and saying, I still can't do it. I said, you're still doing it in the oven, aren't you? Yes, I am. So that's it. There's no major secrets to it. It's just they can't be as healthy as everyone wants them to be, you know?
Remember last week I told you, don't do them in the oven. You're still doing them in the oven.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't really taste fried. They just taste really good.
Yeah, well, I think it's cooking them at a low temperature first, and then finishing them at a high temperature to crisp them. And then, of course, we have our own seasoning that makes them extra special, called Magic Dust.
Magic Dust.
It's a seasoning that we make ourselves. It's got lots of stuff in it. So.
And it's patented. You don't tell
that's
anybody.
It. No, we couldn't tell you all the ingredients. I could tell you a few, all right.
Some of them are illegal. It's got stuff in it to make it addictive, so you come back every Thursday. No, they're really, really lovely. And the other food you do there as well, of course. But it's very much of the kind of street feast vibe, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and we try and use the street stuff that's close to us as well. So the fish man is beside us. We cook his fish for fish tacos. And we use Josephine, the spellbaker from Gorn. We use her bread as well. So, and get lettuce from the veg stall and all that, as much as we can do that kind of thing. But,
I love the Kilkenny Farmers Market. It's really, really nice.
Yeah, it's quite a good one.
And it's a beautiful setting for it. Yeah, oh my God, yeah. Just below the castle.
Yeah, it'd be great now to have it on a Saturday, but I keep on saying that. And,
it would.
I think a lot of people are saying that, but for some reason it's not happening yet. But
what's the reason? Do you think it's because the parade is so busy on a Saturday already? Or
we keep on being told that it's the bylaws that are there are set for a Thursday and that's it. So I know.
So why don't they change them?
They can be changed, but... You know, we keep on shouting about it, and eventually maybe we'll get there. But
we must have a chat with Malcolm Noonan about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that can't go on a Thursday because they're working, you know, it'd be great to have one on a Saturday in a city. So
it'd be great. Yeah. I'd love to bring kids into it, you know, to have your lunch and that and at the castle and stuff. It would be lovely.
That'd be it. So
I have noticed over the last while, though, that the demographic has changed at the farmer's market on a Thursday. You get a lot more young people there now going for the food and picking up their lunch there.
Yeah, we do actually have a lot of people come from schools and stuff like that in the winter time as well, like, you know, that come down. We have them reeled in with the sweet potato chips.
And it the was magic thronged with tourists yesterday.
Yeah, it's been really good now. It's really picking up. The tourist season has definitely started, like, you know, so yeah, that's great.
Very photogenic kind of spot. Every time I go there, there's always a pile of people taking photographs up the market, you know, with the various stalls and the castle in the background. It's lovely. But that's not the only gig you're doing, sure it's not?
No, well, in the last while, we've just started doing a series of pop-ups. Mm. So myself and Vincent Campoloni, who would have started the Bula Bus with me and started various other Mexican food based things before in Kilkenny, so we're doing a pop-up called El Pucho, and it's a Mexican pop-up that we're trying to do events with music. So our next
are you
one,
El Pucho?
No, El Pucho is actually a term for a non-Spanish speaking Mexican. So Vince is from California, so he would have known a lot of people that would have been referred to as El Pucho. It's kind of a derogatory term, really. But, you know, this is a thing that he's brought to the table.
Okay,
like, you know, it's kind of his baby in a way. But, so we're doing Fenley's tomorrow night from 8 o'clock. And we have the great Anya Duffy as well up from Cork to play some music to go with us. So.
And Fenley's is a lovely setting.
Yeah, yeah, it's a brilliant place. Like, you know.
And that's a bring-your-own event, is it?
It is, yeah, that's right. So... we'll be providing the tacos, and Eitan will be serving teas and coffees and cakes and all that kind of stuff, and then bring your own beer, and Anya Duffy will definitely have everyone dancing, so that's her job.
You mentioned the Bula Bus, of course, and that's where most people would have known you from, Billy Burns, the big double-decker bus that you served food out of the side of for many a year. That was a great hit.
Yeah, it was about 5 years, I think, in total that we were there for, and it just came to an end there at the end of last year, really, so... it was just time to move on, so we moved on. So,
but it's a great logo, isn't it?
Yeah. we're taking that and kind of using that branding, if you like, to kind of we're still using it for the market anyway, and then we're going to use that to kind of try and get the El Pucho thing across to everyone, you know, and see how we go with that.
Super. Now, you, I know, have been teaching a few classes on street food and the various traditions of street food. I know it's something that you make your living from, but Ireland's not great on the kind of street food traditions. Other cultures have much more advanced traditions of it, don't they?
Yeah, I suppose it would have been part of the culture in more so in other countries. It's not really part of the culture in Ireland, I suppose. Mm. Maybe that's to do with the climate.
Street drinking would
but,
be more.
Yeah, maybe. You know, but in a lot of countries, that's a way of life for a lot of people, either selling it or and eating it and consuming it, you know. So, there is kind of... That will be missing in our past, but I think we're starting to bring it into things now with farmers markets. And there's a lot of food now, a lot of new food companies starting up and doing street food and bringing great food ideas from other countries here, you know.
And apart from the Mexican, is there anything that you, any particular variety of street food that you particularly favour?
Oh, there's quite a lot, yeah. Indian would be well up there. I'm actually going to India on my honeymoon.
Oh, very good.
So we're going to
research.
Totally research. Yeah.
Tax deductible.
Going to Kerala for about 3 weeks and then Goa for a week.
Oh wow!
So I'm really looking forward to that.
I'm sure.
Yeah, there's been a lot of different street food that we've done, because a lot of the street food in India is not really curries. You know, it's all different things like paprikat and, you know, different kind of, a lot of fried food actually, you know, like samosas and bhajis and all that kind of stuff. But there's just a wide variety of food there that, yeah, needs to be explored.
And cooked on volume. Like, it's incredible how busy these little stalls get. I think when you develop that tradition, yeah. You know, you see it in Japan, although it's Japan being Japan, it's all terribly well organized. So you'd have a little booth out of which your food is sold, not just on the street. But around all parts of Asia, they're big into the kind of eating as you walk and eating as you go.
That's it. And Thailand, and we were in Malaysia last year, and we went to Penang, which is seen as the street food capital of the world because it's a real melting pot of cultures. So you've got a lot of Chinese and Thai and Indian. So they're all mixed together and come up with things like laksa, you know. That's a real hybrid of taking Thai food and Indian food especially and marrying them together with, you know, the flavors, you know, the spices that they use in laksa would be really Indian, but then they're putting in coconut milk and making it into a broth, like a Thai dish, like, you know. So there's a lot of dishes like that from there that were really interesting, you know. So
Jesus, I'm getting hungry now. Yeah. Just listening to
go there on holidays.
And is there anywhere in Ireland that's kind of taken this, adopting this kind of tradition anywhere else? Like, is it big in Dublin now? Or
I suppose there's more markets in Dublin, I'd say, than anywhere else. There seems to be a lot of lunchtime markets and stuff like that, so. But I think the country is doing fairly well. There's a lot of, different festivals that are just totally around food.
Mm.
So that's brilliant, because it brings everyone the best of what's going around, you know, and showcase it. Especially like the Save Kilkenny is brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
The amount of food that's there for the weekend is great, you know.
Yeah, it's a super festival. We're spoiled with it, really. Mm-hmm. We've been to other festivals over the years doing various smallholder events, and while they're all lovely and they all have something to offer, Savor really is the best that I've seen. And I'm not just saying that because it's in Kilkenny. It's a super festival.
Yes.
There's a question in here. How do you get a stall selling at the market? Would you know?
You can only apply for it in January. I think it's a once-a-year type situation.
And then the council controls it, I think.
Yeah, it is the council, yeah. And then it would depend what you want to sell. So if you're really going to conflict with somebody else, you want to do the exact same thing, you mightn't get your license. So it would be based on what you want to do. But if you're going to add something to the market, you'd have a good chance of getting a license.
Probably somebody.
It is limited, I think, to the amount of spaces as well. I don't know if there'd be many free. But
the numbers there every week seem to vary a lot, don't they?
Yeah, well, especially in the winter time. Yeah. They're trying to combat that a little bit this year, you know, by making people, you know, come, especially for the high season, you know. So generally it's pretty good in the summer where it's consistent enough, you know.
And did you get to make a taco for His Royal Highness the Prince?
I didn't, no. I had some sweet potato chips ready for him, but he actually just came up to the fish stall and then went across to the other side.
He missed out. He missed out. Oh,
someone was in the ear of the security and got, you know, it was like, oh, you have to come over to my stall. They'd been talking to him earlier on, so they kind of ushered him that way, you know. So
maybe they heard about the secret ingredients and magic dust.
Maybe, yeah.
Himself and Camilla, God knows what they'd be up to. That's a pity. We could have had him back every Thursday.
Yeah.
So it is something that I'm seeing more and more of. And the last time I was up in Dublin, when I was down at the new kind of Silicon Docks there, there's a lot of street vendors there at lunchtime. Real American kind of tradition.
Yeah.
Because you see that in the cities in the States all the time. A van will just show up and do the office trade.
Yeah, you can't really do that so much in Ireland. You wouldn't get away with it. In America, they'll just give you a parking ticket and they just see that as, right, that's my $100 to pay for the day. You know, that a lot of them will say that, like, I don't mind getting a ticket because that's just, I'm going to make so much money, it's fine.
Right.
But they'd actually think in Ireland, they just wouldn't let you stay there, you know. Like, yeah. You can't just pull up anywhere you want in Kilkenny and sell, you know.
Yeah.
You have to have a designated area, or, you know, even in the towns around the city, there's a designated area that you can get a license for, and that's it. So, yeah.
There's a lot of kind of health and safety stuff as well, though, I'd say, is there?
It's not too bad. I mean, you have to get passed by the HSE, so that's more where you're going to prepare your food. And then whatever setup you have at the stall, you have to obviously get that passed. You can't have any food business without being passed by the HSE. But I mean, you can call them up and ask them what you need to do, and they'll tell you that they're to help too, you know. So it's a very
yeah, they're a lot less scary than they used to be, I think.
They'll be scary if you're not doing the right thing, or if you don't try and do the right thing, you know. So yeah, all the information is there, so if you don't go and look for it, then it's probably your own fault.
And at the stall in the summer, have you any kind of summer changes on the menu coming up? Or
well, actually, I had to reduce my menu a little bit because I'm now doing all my prep in the incubation kitchen in the School of Food. Mm. So I had to reduce the amount that was on my menu just for the amount of refrigeration and all I have. But I actually want to start doing another vegan taco. Because one of my friends is starting, Berkey is starting to make his own tempeh here in Kilkenny. Mm. So that'll be the only tempeh that's been made in Ireland, as far as I know.
Wow.
I actually tasted tempeh recently for the very first time. I'd never actually heard of it before that.
Yeah.
You might need to explain what it is.
So yeah, it's fermented soybean. Mm. So you could kind of liken it to tofu, but it tastes totally different because it's fermented. But
it tastes.
Yeah, it does taste, and it's got a nicer texture, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing is, any of the one that I would have had before would have all come from Holland, and it's a lot older, and if it's older, it's a lot stronger in flavour and not quite as nice. So recently I just had one that was 3 hours old, and I went, oh, okay, that's what it's supposed to be. It uses a similar spore that mushrooms have, so it has a very delicate kind of a mushroom flavour on it, and it's really can be really nice.
Mm.
And it's like crushed up beans, so it has a nice texture, a crunchy kind of texture, doesn't
it? Yeah, it can have a crunchy. It can be soft, or you can roast it and you can pan fry it and get a bit of texture that way.
And
as
add
well,
different,
you know,
things to it and that, yeah.
So that's going on the menu.
So yeah, that's going to go on the menu in a Mexican style. It's a Mexican chorizo. I was in Mexico on holidays 2 years ago, and there was they have their own style of chorizo. It's actually just a flavoured pork mince.
Mm.
It's not actually a sausage, so I'm going to do something similar with the tempeh and try and flavour that the way, so it'll be a bit like that.
So a vegan ingredient and a bit of chorizo in there for the non-vegans?
No, it won't be chorizo. No, it'll be using the tempeh as a mince.
I understand.
Yeah,
I understand, as in
replacement for the pork.
I understand. Yeah, we've
been trying to do a lot of vegan things, you know, because there's a big demand for it. Like, even in Fenley's tomorrow night, our menu is split in the middle. So we've pulled pork and we have jackfruit, which mirrors the pulled pork. It's very light pulled pork, and they'll be served the same way. And then we have a fish taco that'll be the normal battered fish. And then we have a battered tofu that'll have seaweed on it, and it kind of mirrors fish as well. So it's like tofu fish, if you like.
Wow.
Verticals.
Wow. And you're going to be doing more of these kind of street food sessions throughout the summer, are you?
Yeah. We did one in Tully's in Waterford last week, and in Tully's in Carlow the week before. and in Callaghan's in Carrigansure a few weeks before that again. So, and
where's the best place for people to find out about them when they have
the Bula Bus,
Facebook page.
Facebook page, yeah.
Very
that's
good.
Where all the events are kind of coming from. So, yeah.
Brilliant. So tomorrow it's A Night of Tacos by El Pocho. Pucho? El Pucho, and music by the wonderful Anya Duffy. Bring your own bottle event in the courtyard at Fenley's of Callan. And coffee and cake will be available there till 9 p.m. and street food from 7 to 11.
Yep.
And doors open at 7 o'clock and the performance starts at 9. And it's a tenner admission on the door and then the food is extra, I'd say,
yep,
on top of that.
Yeah, right.
Brilliant. So that's out in Fenley's in Callan tomorrow night. Podge, thanks a million for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having
me. You have
me.
A voice for radio. It's great.
Thanks.
Brilliant. We'll have you in again, I think, during the summer, maybe.
Lovely, yeah.
And best of luck then. Continued success with the Bula Bus on the Farmers Market on Thursdays.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Great. We're going to take an ad break and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes after these. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt and I'm here as usual with Mags Morrissey. And thanks again to those who have contacted the show. There's a few text messages backed up there that we'll have to get to in a couple of minutes. We're live today, Friday from 4 to 5, and you can send in your questions or comments by text to 086 353 7782 or give us a call on 776 2777. If you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday, obviously don't bother texting us as we won't get to see your message, but you can email us kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, I'm absolutely delighted to be joined on the phone all the way from Otter Farm in the UK by Mark Diacono. How are you, Mark?
I'm all good, and you?
Good, thanks, good. Now, Mark, where do I start with the list of your accomplishments? Gardener, cook, author, award-winning author at this stage. 7 books, I think, isn't it?
I lost a bit. It must be around that, yeah.
best known for a couple that I have here in front of me, The New Kitchen Garden, which is one that's close to our heart on this show, obviously, and then The Year at Otter Farm, two lovely, lovely books.
Hey, thank you. Thank you.
Now, your books, particularly The Year at Otter Farm, are unusual and most interesting in that you mention a lot of the things that you grow at Otter Farm that are completely different to what you'd expect people to be growing in mainland UK.
That's it, yeah. It's interesting because I came at kind of growing things quite late, so I had absolutely my knowledge in no way interacted with my enthusiasm because I had no knowledge. So it was really a case of kind of discovering all the delicious things that might be around and then finding out that some of them wouldn't grow in the UK and then trying some others. So I think that's a lot of it. Is maybe I turned up some by not really knowing what I should and shouldn't be growing, and yeah, and I filled the place with lots of lovely flavour.
But you have Nepalese pepper, Eastern mint, Japanese quinces, bamboo shoots, bells. I've done my research for this, Mark. I've done my research.
It sounds good, doesn't it? It sounds all right. It sounds quite tasty. Tea should be good. Yeah.
What a bewildering
aroma. Yeah. Well, they're all lovely. See, that's the thing. Most of the ones you've just mentioned there, they smell gorgeous anyway before you even get to eat them. You know, the Nepalese pepper's kind of, your kind of Sichuan pepper with the little pink peppercorns that are full of kind of zing and all of that that you can buy here and there. The Nepalese is just the Nepalese version of that. So it's full on kind of grinding pepper, like black pepper, but livelier, and it's got a really lovely kind of citrus edge to it too, and the leaves carry a similar scent, and they're just great to walk past and rub anyway, but then you get to pick the things in autumn and get to use them, and it's just brilliant. You know, it's one of those real pleasures, and I must have, I don't know, 20 kinds of mint, I guess. And
wow,
it's a bit like spuds or tomatoes. You know, once you start growing it for yourself, it becomes quite apparent that it's not just one thing, you know. So Moroccan mint is my kind of default. That'll do anything kind of mint, but things like Eastern mint and a few of the others, they're really cool and kind of cold, you know. And then there's strawberry mint, chocolate mint, and as soon as you start playing with them, you know a recipe or two springs to mind, and you know, you get lovely kind of individual uses for them, like you do a spud or you'd use a cherry tomato in a different way to a big fat beefsteak one, and you know, more often than not, I have to confess, they head towards cocktails, but you know, that's not the end of the world either, is it?
There is a bit of alcohol mentioned throughout the book, Mark, I have to
say.
I'm sorry.
I have to apologise.
I don't know how the Irish get the reputation as being the drinkers. Every time I'm over in the UK, you people scare me. It's shocking how much. During the day
sorry,
and everything.
Sorry.
Because the books...
Well, you know...
No, I was just going to say, the books aren't just about how to grow. There are some lovely recipes throughout.
No, but that's the thing, isn't it? I think you've got to... I think if you, especially if it's more unusual stuff or maybe things that people aren't familiar with from the shops, if you don't kind of take them on a journey slightly into the kitchen, just with even with a few ideas that they can then kind of off-road themselves, then people are often nervous about giving the thing a go in the first place. Mm. You know, so, I don't know, something... Like the Szechuan pepper, which I grow, which is similar to the Nepalese, you know, it's not difficult to use it straight as pepper, but you know, it's one of the ingredients in Chinese five spice. So you give people the ingredients for that, you know, the recipe for that, and away they go, and it's just really just starting people off so they feel like, hang on a minute, I could get tucked into this, and then off you go from there. And I think that's a really lovely way of doing it.
It is, and I have to say that reading the new kitchen garden, how to grow some of what you eat no matter where you live and by yourself, it kind of changed how I think about gardening, because I was always advising people, when you start gardening or growing your own food, only grow what you use. Because I remembered in the early days just being losing the run of myself and buying seeds for everything and just never getting around to using the more unusual stuff. Your approach is the exact opposite of that. It's, if you like the taste of something, see if you can grow it, no matter how exotic.
Yeah, I think there's a load of value in both ways of thinking. I think as long as you get people to actually think before they start growing, I think that's a really important one, because if you just go out there and show all the usual suspects, that's fine, but you very quickly find you've got better things to do with your time. And my way of coming at it is just a slight change from normal, is that if people grow what they know, you end up usually by doing what most people do, which is growing the cheap, most widely available and most disease prone food that is out there, and then by extension you're buying all the expensive stuff, and you're buying the things that you know, it's short season, that are really amazing, you're buying them and paying a lot of money for them. Mm-hmm. So my feeling is, unless you can be self-sufficient, and there's very few of us, then the thing to do is to be growing the things with most flavor that are expensive, and then to be growing things that you can't eat unless you grow them yourself. You know, things like Szechuan pepper, things like chili and guava and mulberries and medlars, they very rarely show up in the shops, and you can grow your own, and they're just amazing.
Now, you mentioned mulberry there, and from what I hear, it was the mulberry that kind of set the whole dream going for you, wasn't it?
It was, and I think that's maybe what pushed me down that avenue as well, of growing unusual things, or things that were less widely available in the shops, is that way back, I had a friend, I was staying with a friend in Suffolk, and she said, the mulberry tree's got some mulberries on, we'll have some tonight, and I was kind of... Wow, is that a big thing? I don't know. But we ate some, and they were just extraordinary. The best fruit I'd ever eaten by a country mile, you know. And that was a real kind of eye-opener, is that I couldn't imagine living, you know, I was 30 or something when I did that, and it was like, I can't imagine living another 30 years without eating these things, you know. But I knew that I couldn't get them any other way, because they're so delicate when they're, you know, they're full of juice, they're full of flavour, they're full of all the loveliness that falls apart on the journey to the shelf. So you have to grow them yourself, or know someone who does, if you want to eat them. And that really kind of made me go, right, I've got to plant a mulberry or two. And away I went.
If we're relying on the supermarkets to be able to handle stuff that, you know, has a shelf life and travels well and so on, we're really limiting the palate of the things that we look at and the things that we get to taste.
That's exactly it.
I picked some wildflowers earlier in the week just to take a photo of them and put them in a glass on the windowsill, and 2 hours later a lot of them had just completely, you know, disintegrated. Really, really pretty to look at, but we're never going to see them for sale anywhere.
That's it. You know, it's you know, this is the great thing. You know, if you grow some of your own food like that, that is unbuyable. You're getting flavors that you wouldn't get in any other way, and that's just a really brilliant thing. And even if you do grow the stuff that other people do, stuff like asparagus and, you know, the salad leaves, you're growing the best you could ever eat, simply because the journey from plot to plate is so short, and it's really all about that quality. And I think that's another big thing. Even if you're just growing it, you don't have to be self-sufficient. You know, even just growing a little bit of what you eat is such a life shifter.
Now, one of the things I love about the Kitchen Garden book that you have is that there's a column, there's the usual kind of calendar of when to sow things and the list of plants that you might want to grow. But you have a column in there which is expensive to buy. So you can have a look down through that and see, right, this one's expensive, but I can also grow it. Romanesco jumped out at me. I love that plant.
Oh, man, that's a beauty, isn't it? And it's one of those that makes you marvel at nature. You know, why when there's a, you know, you take a cauliflower, so it's kind of sat between a cauliflower and broccoli, you know. Mm. We have a cauliflower. It's a lovely kind of creamy dome, but it's a cauliflower. You know, there's nothing crazy about it. Then you look at this Romanesco, which is a kind of a series, you know, it's one of those fractal things where every part of it is built up of smaller parts of itself, so a kind of spiral of smaller spirals, and it's absolutely unnecessary.
It's beautiful.
You know, it's completely unnecessary for it to be like that. And like you say, it's beautiful, isn't it? And it makes you go, there's something going on here in this crazy world of nature, just to make something extraordinarily pointlessly beautiful like that, and then deliver on it with the flavour that it has. You know, so again, where do you ever see that for sale? You know, very, very rarely. So, again, another big tick for growing it yourself.
Oh, I never have. And actually, the first time I sowed it a few years ago, I'd kind of forgotten what it was because it just looks like a brassica, and stuck out the last few plants from the seed tray in the greenhouse. I got the fright of my life one day. I walked into the greenhouse and there was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. just growing there in front of me. I didn't want to cut it. I took 1,000 photographs. And speaking of photographs, that's something you do as well, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm out there so much, and, you know, it started off really as a way of recording what I was up to, and also, like I say, not having any experience of what I was doing, it was really lovely. What happened last year, is it on my head? You know, is what's the journey? What does it look like? How does it feel? When is it, you know, all of those changes. And then I just kept taking pictures, and people let me, and then they decided that I could. I was cheaper than getting a real photographer in, so I started taking them for all the books. And you know, hey, I love it now as much as the writing. To be honest, I really do. It's one of those pleasures, you know, of the day that I love. So whether it's on the phone or whether it's with the, you know, a proper camera, if I can call it that, it's part of the whole thing for me, kind of remembering and enjoying and kind of capturing it. I really love it.
And it, once you start to do it, I follow you on Instagram, your beautiful photographs on Instagram, and I think once you start to observe like that and use the phone to record, you train yourself to be constantly on the lookout then for a next photo opportunity, but that makes you observant. You get to see the things in the garden.
It's really funny, isn't it? Because I was slightly concerned that what it might do is mean that I stopped using my memory, if you know what I mean. Mm. You know, that whole fear thing that people have about you know, phones and people taking pictures all the time, it can stop you actually enjoying the moment. But it's really not that. I find that it makes me more relaxed and attuned to what's going on, because I'm being observant in a slightly different way, as well as I used to be. You know, it's not that I might be wandering past, and I might be, as you say, thinking, you know, I'm out here with the phone, is there anything to be capturing? But it makes you look in a slightly different way, on top of, rather than instead of, how you look anyway. And I think that's quite an important thing.
It also adds a little bit of frustration to your day if it's going otherwise brilliantly, because just when you grab the phone, that bee will fly away, or that fly.
Ah, the little devil. It's terrible, isn't it? We have otters in the river here, and exactly that. I saw one, and I had the presence of mind not to just dash for the camera, and just to watch it for a second. And it was only there, you know, it kind of spotted me, and it was only there for about 3 seconds. And I could have lost that. I could have lost that very easily by going to take its picture. So you still keep your marbles about you, you know. So it's all good.
Almost on a daily basis, I lose my phone, or almost lose my phone, in attempting to catch a photograph of some animal doing something cute. Or
yep, it's the way it is, isn't it? It's
the last one was
modern life.
Yeah, absolutely. The last one was a kingfisher flying over the pond, and I pulled my phone out of my pocket so fast I actually shot it out of my hand towards the kingfisher.
Well, let's hope it's gone on to squeak its way down there another day. Yeah, very easily done.
We've had a text in from another Mark actually saying, "Is that the bloke off Gardener's World?" You were on Gardener's World recently, weren't you?
A little while ago. Yeah, they did a thing on the peppers that we grew, because again, it's crazy, isn't it? It's one of those things that you know, that everybody has pepper in their house, and yet nobody grows it. Mm. And so they did a thing on pepper, and we did a thing on mainly on the Szechuan, but there's Nepalese and Japanese too. So yes, that was last. Oh crikey, when was it? September, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
That was a lot of fun. They're just a lovely team, and really, really, you know, just made it easy and fun and pleasurable and all of that stuff.
And that's pepper then that we can take and dry and put in the meal, is it?
Oh God, yeah, absolutely. You just, it's, you know, so your black pepper grows on a vine, and you can't grow it here in this country. It's just too, it's not hot enough, but you can grow these other ones that grow as a bush, and you literally just walk around in September, anywhere really from when the flowers turn into pepper, which is kind of early July, depending on the variety, they can still keep fruiting maybe even until first week of December, and you just walk around going, hello, that's £5, £10, all that money you're saving yourself on black pepper. And it's very simple. You lay them out to dry for maybe 1 or 2 days just in your kitchen or something, and before you know it, that just lets enough moisture out that when you put it through a pepper mill, it will pass through and grind merrily, and that's all you have to do.
Well, there's more instructions on that and lots of other things that you can grow in the climate that we have here in Kilkenny would be kind of similar to the one that you have there, I think, Mark, Mark's book, The New Kitchen Garden, How to Grow Some of What You Eat No Matter Where You Live. And there's 6 other books by Mark, some of them in the some of them in the River Cottage Handbook series that I'd highly recommend. Mark Diacono, thanks a million for joining us on the show today.
It's been a pleasure. Keep coming on, and I hope you and all your listeners have a brilliant weekend.
Thanks a million, Mark. And I love in the introduction to Mark's book, I think he sums it up absolutely brilliantly, Mags, where he says, your kitchen garden, whatever form it takes, can be a place of pleasure, of eye-opening flavours, where life's balance can miraculously be restored.
My goodness.
Isn't that a nice way of putting it?
He sounds like a nice guy.
He writes really, really, really well. He's a good man for a drink as well, actually. I met him at Stephen Lamb's wedding last year. So now we're almost out of time. I have a little bit of music for us to play out on today. I actually brought in Summer. So the theme music that we use on the show is by Paul Reed, and it's the Victorian Kitchen Garden Suite. But there's a part of that is called Summer, and it's not used in the theme, but I thought we might have a listen to that today. A couple of quick jobs to do this week. Do you have anything planned, Max?
Yep, I'm getting new hens tomorrow, actually.
Oh, very good.
I've got a new coop put in place today, and going shopping first thing in the morning for hens.
Oh, super. I have some chicks actually just hatched underneath a hen this week, and also have some in the incubator. But just like Mark was saying, get out there and get some growing, and now is the ideal time to be sowing your broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower. Might want to cover it with a fleece for another week or so, given that we've had some very, very late frosts. But that's it for the kitchen garden this week. We've run out of time. We hope you enjoyed the show. You can keep in touch with us during the week on Twitter at NesbitF or at Mags Morrissey, or email kitchengarden@ckc.ie. We'll be back on the Kitchen Garden show on Community Radio Kilkenny City next Friday from 4 to 5, and repeat it again on Monday. We'll be back in a week.